Four bodhisattva vows. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. So, well, when it comes to the Dharma talk, I'm at a loss for words, as I begin every Dharma talk lately, and a loss for words. You know, what came up for me today was loneliness and the implication of feeling lonely. There's different kinds of loneliness, right? I mean, there's the loneliness that you experience when you've lost someone, you know, that you no longer have in your circle, in your life. Then there's the loneliness that comes from a kind of longing that is based on not feeling connected, not feeling whole and part of your world and your surroundings, feeling alienated, separate. Loneliness is a form of self-cherishing. Loneliness is not the opposite of feeling complete and whole. Loneliness is a misunderstanding of the actual situation that you're in. Our original nature can't be described in words. Yet you can experience this connection that can be referred to, one way it can be referred to is non-duality. So feeling separate is in the realm of duality. It's in the realm of us and them. I'm here, you're there. It's part of the dream. It's part of the idea that you are this separate, solid entity. On Wednesday, I talked about dreaming. And when you know you're dreaming, you're no longer identified with the dream. What I'm talking about here is an extension of that. Loneliness is also dreaming. And when you know you're dreaming, you can still experience loneliness. But you're not identified with it. It's very subtle. But it's the difference between health and illness, wellness and disease. Loneliness can lead to taking all kinds of actions that are unhealthy. Recognizing it, in a way, it's like flipping a switch and the light coming on. It's not something I can relate to you, that I can give you, but I can tell you, you're really not alone. This mind, just like loneliness, there are different forms of loneliness. There's different levels to this mind. On one level, it's just very restricted to this momentary human experience of I, me, and mine, identification with self. Idea of self, I, me, mine, my mind, my idea, my way of doing things. This is it. You see, that's the dream. If you can expand that view by recognizing it as a dream, then you can experience big mind, big eye. Big mind, big eye is there, 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 here. All of it at the same time. Our minds are not distant. You have an experience with someone where you say, oh, I was just thinking that. I was headed that way too. Or reaching for something and giving it to someone when they need it without them asking. These things that happen are happening because big mind. Harmony and balance is available always. The reason we suffer is this identification with I, me, and mine, small mind, small idea of what the world is, and the threats that we perceive because of that. We perceive the world as a threat when we limit ourselves by I, me, and mine. Therefore, you have the situation we're in, culturally, as a family, as a group, all these differences people holding on to, clinging to, because they're afraid. You know, it's based on fear. What is fearlessness? Fearlessness is not the opposite of fear. Fearlessness is big mind. It's being awake. Fearlessness, there's nothing to fear. You can't even comprehend it. A bodhisattva doesn't think I'm a bodhisattva. Buddha doesn't think I'm a Buddha. It's just as it is. Just be who you are, just the way you are. That's it. That's all there is. But we're always trying to make something because we're afraid we don't have it. But we already have it. But we keep wanting to make it. In Zen, we talk about solving the great matter of life and death. Well, what is that? It's this basic misunderstanding of what's really happening here, based on this identification of I, me, and mine, and then losing it. What if there really is nothing to lose? Everything changes, right? You're not the same person today you were 20 years ago. Strongly identified with an ideology, an idea of I, me, and mine, all of that creates what's called samsara, this unending circle of life and death and karma. You know, and in most Buddhist traditions, it's reincarnation. You keep coming back because you keep missing the point. Or you're coming back to help those that are missing the point. Coming back on purpose. You're dreaming, but you know you're dreaming. You're doing it with the intent of saving all sentient beings. Compassion and great love are automatic working because you're no longer identified with I, me, and mine. Your intent, save all sentient beings. But you can't save all sentient beings. Buddha said, I saved all sentient beings, but I didn't save any sentient beings. Because they're already saved. It's just the idea that they're not. right?
When you say the same old sexy feelings, right?
Yeah.
It's like, if there's no, if there's nothing to say, what's the point of saying it, though? Like, if there's no reason, if you don't have to save anybody because they're already seen things as they're already saved, they just have to figure it out. What's the point of saying it?
Broaden your horizons. The world doesn't end at the end of the sunset that you see. The big picture is looking at it from the sun. So in order to see things in from the big picture, big eye, you have to stop identifying with small eye. It's just an expedient means. Save all sentient beings, get out of your little trip, and recognize there's all of this. And you're part of it all. It implies that you're something more than what your little concerns, your storms in the teacup, if you will, are occupying you. So if we get out of our little storm in the teacup, then we can see the bigger picture. And what occupies us then is a much broader.
The translation seems a little bit lofty.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just the translation. I guess I'm looking at it wrong. I've got to say it. But...
Well, lofty from the point of view of I, me, and mine is a small ego. Buddha's saved all sentient beings, but didn't save any sentient beings.
That's what his critics say.
No, that's what he says. That's what he says.
I understand. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to attain. That's, I can handle that.
Yeah.
Right?
The very first one is the toughest one.
The hard one is a real tough one. Everybody's so resistant to it.
Yeah. Yeah, especially they don't want to be saved the way I want to save them. if I was king of the world, it would be a much better place. So there's also this modesty that comes with it, right? There's this humble understanding that you can't. But you do it anyway. Your intention involves all sentient beings, not just self, you see? So even though it's humbling, and in all humility, you recognize this is a big project here, but you're part of it. You feel part of this project, which is beyond words. So all of these teachings are not really the answer. They're just pointing at what it is. They're expedient means. All expedient means are just tools to get us to understand our own nature. So we get caught up in words. That's why in Zen, we talk about direct experience. So what we talk about is just pointing at something that you need to directly experience. That's the only way to get it. But, you know, we love our words. I mean, poetry. But what does poetry do? Paints a picture of something that's beyond words. Ideology, on the other hand, is trying to get you, is trying to control you with particular words. Yeah, I could talk and talk and talk, but it doesn't make any sense to. At some point, it's just, what is this? But I love your questions because they're always good. Questions are important. They really help us to understand what's happening. Me just sitting here talking doesn't really do it. But when you ask a question, it just kind of leads to that unavailable understanding.
But if it's ineffable, and we have these Dharma talks, we could, you could just sit there for 30 minutes with open, just smile and grin at each other. You know.
There are teachers that do that.
You're kind of hitting the same thing in a weird way.
How am I doing, Ed? Can you hear me okay? You're not missing much. He knows that.
I feel like the walking meditation helps give us a glimpse beyond the dream.
Yeah.
Because as a group, we're all kind of moving as if we're one. The energy feels, I mean, I'm not even sure if the word is, the energy feels like we're all one as we're moving around the zendo.
Yes.
But it's not really something that's, but it's kind of, it's an experience, but it's not really something that you can easily describe to someone who hasn't done it. Like if I have a friend who's never had that experience and I try to explain it, it's very difficult to communicate.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, of course. And that's why I say I sit here and I, you know, how do I talk about it? Well, I have to experience it.
There's a notion, similar sort of thing, but it goes back to sitting. The idea that when you're actually sitting with all the bodhisattvas and bodhisattvas that have ever been, ever existed and will exist. And at that time, they're there.
Yes.
Sharing that notion of connection across time and space like that, it's phenomenal.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I guess two things. I read the Bodhisattva Bow as an aspiration. I really don't know where it's going to go. But if you're going to do this practice, why not go for it all? And also, the question, and then you brought up too, asking the questions. The best response to that is a better question. An answer, as if there is an answer.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Anything from Zoom world there, Nancy? How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. I wanted to say two things. One, I'd like to comment about what Buddha said. You know, he saved all beings and he didn't save all beings is another way of, I think, him saying, just get over yourself. You know, just get over it. Just get over yourself of thinking that you save everything because you have it going. So that's my comment on that. And the other comment I had was on your use of the word misunderstanding. We were talking with some people yesterday about the three poisons and they used the word delusion, but I really like the word misunderstanding better than the word delusion. So I think I'm going to use that word instead now. It has a better feeling to me than the word delusion.
It seems less judgmental, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like you're making a judgment and saying you're deluded. Yeah.
Or I'm deluded rather than I'm misunderstood. Right.
I misunderstood. Yeah, I didn't.
I like that word. So thank you.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm using the word dreaming, because to me, it doesn't have any implications of positive, negative. It's just sort of stating the situation. We're dreaming. You decide whether it's a bad dream or a good dream. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you. Ed, thanks for joining us. Come back.